Hello everyone, Dave Levinsky here from Growth Inc., and I'm really excited today to be doing an interview with Richard Harris. Now Richard is a 20-year veteran of the public relations industry, and he has an absolute wealth of knowledge on this subject. Currently Richard serves as the founder and CEO of Momentum, which provides communications, strategy, and placement agent services to private equity funds, investment banks, and selected early stage and nonprofit companies. Now, at Momentum, Richard has served clients as varied as Polaris Venture Partners, Star Jones, the Girl Scouts of America, and Growth Inc. So I know firsthand just how good Richard is. So Richard, thanks again. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today.
Thank you, David, and hello, everyone.
Excellent. So Richard, the first question I have is, what is a press release, and specifically, what is the difference between an article and a press release?
Well, a press release is something that you would write, and it's the primary communications tool that a company, you know, let's say a Growth Inc. or an investment bank or really any kind of company uses to communicate an interesting piece of information to a highly specialized audience. So, for example, if you're a venture capital fund and you have just taken a stake in an early stage company, you know, perhaps you will issue a press release to that effect, and primarily it may go somewhere like VentureWire or LBO Wire or The Deal, and those are highly specialized audiences because they deal primarily in private equity or venture capital or finance. So that's the function of a press release. It's the medium that many companies use to get out a specific message to a highly targeted group of individuals or businesses.
Now, does that apply? You mentioned specialized and highly targeted. Let's say I created a widget, a tooth whitening product mm-hmm. that appeals to the masses, to all types of individuals. How does that differ when my product is more of a mass market product?
You know, honestly, it really doesn't. Just think you'd have to sort of use a different perspective. For example, although it's a mass market product, you're obviously going to market it to the oral care industry, and there are tons of trade and industry press that would be interested in your latest invention. So, okay. You know, for example, you'd want to probably put something out there that would be picked up by Dentistry Weekly or something like that. And because it could be also positioned as a beauty product, let's say it's a teeth whitener, you would think maybe I want to do some health and lifestyle. So, Self or Marie Claire or Glamour or Elle or any of these media which have any sort of personal wellness beauty section, perhaps there's even something more distinctive about it. It's environmentally sustainable. So there again is another specialized media that you would perhaps want to inform about your accomplishment. So even though it says it's a mass market product, perhaps I'm a contrarian. I don't believe in truly that there are mass market products. There are there are highly specialized markets where you deploy your news, and the aggregate of all those markets gives you sort of a mass transmitted capacity.
Got it. So your initial point holds true that you're going after a specialized market, but I guess the key point is there may be more than one specialized market
exactly.
that you want to target.
Exactly.
Got it. That was very interesting. I never really thought about it that way. That's great. So you, I understand that. Now, how do you create a catchy press release, how do you make it newsworthy?
Okay, these are my rules, and you are free to vet them and to do some due diligence, because I'm sure you're going to get different opinions, but please, please, please have news in your news release, honestly. Journalists, the time of a journalist is very circumscribed. They are being pitched or called or tweeted or emailed by hundreds of people every day, not inclusive of the pitch that you're trying to do. So it's an obligation we, meaning the people who are issuing the release, to have actually something that's newsworthy. Is it a new product or service? Is it a new significant strategic alliance? Did you raise money? That is always a great story, even especially now in these in this era. So that's a very important thing, because on one end, from the strategic perspective, you want to make sure that you're putting out something into the public sphere which will get noticed. And if I may use this word, on a moral and ethical perspective, don't waste people's time. You know, you would not, if someone called you up and, you know, tried to pitch something to you where there was no intrinsic value to your business, you would be irritated. And we have to have that same perspective when we talk to journalists.
Got it. So can you give us some examples of what's not news?
Again, these are my opinions. Generally, I will really fight clients who want to issue press releases saying that they've moved offices. And you know, unless you're moving into a building designed by Frank Gehry or Ren Koolhaas, I am not sure that it's really a newsworthy endeavor. Perhaps if you're the anchor tenant in a new building, that might be newsworthy from a commercial real estate and business news standpoint. But if you're just moving offices because you need more space or what have you, I don't think that those are that's necessarily a very newsworthy item. Strategic partnerships, believe it or not, I really like to vet clients on that. How important is it? How big is it? What does it really do to accelerate your business development efforts? And I really like to make certain that, you know, that the news that they want to, you know, announce really is going to be of interest to the journalist, and more importantly, to, you know, the audience that you're trying to reach.
Got it. Now, with the, you know, hundreds of press releases that journalists are looking at each day, what are some of the key points that the journalists look for when assessing if they want to turn that press release into a story?
Is it information that they have never heard before? Is it new? Even more importantly than that, actually the first thing, is it relevant to what they write about? There's no sort of magical formula, but a lot of this is just simple common sense and do your homework. If you're talking with a, you know, if you're, let's say that your story is about an advisory engagement, for a real estate firm, maybe you don't want to, pitch that to the journalist who covers, you know, biotechnology firms, even though he may work, you know, in the business or, you know, financial news department of a media organization. You really have to make sure that the information that you're giving is relevant to what that journalist reports on. And I think if those two things will at least get them to give you a call or an email back, tell me more about this client. Tell me more about this engagement. Tell me more about this fundraising. And then really on the phone, they'll decide, okay, I'd like to talk to Emily. I'd like to talk to Dave. I'd like to talk to Jay. You know, I'd like to talk to Christiana or whoever. And that's kind of in that moment that, you know, that they will decide whether it's newsworthy or not.
Got it. So the key points you said are that it's relevant to what they write about, and that it's new. They haven't heard that before, and it's unique enough. Is that correct?
It's unique. Uniqueness is key. But make sure that this information is being provided to the relevant individual.
Got it. Okay, so that's actually an interesting point in terms of the relevant individual. You're saying that even if it was a specific niche magazine, you still have to find that relevant reporter.
Exactly.
Got it.
You know, for example, Yvette Cantrow, who is a journalist with The Deal, she tends to report on fundraising for early stage companies, and a couple of other subjects as well. But if you have a release of that nature, I typically will call up Ms. Cantrow and say, this might be of interest to you. Amy Wu, who I don't know if is with The Deal anymore, but she was actually the reporter that did the profile on Lee, she writes for the Movers and Shakers column, which is, you know, these executive moves, these, the formation of new advisory shops or, new boutique investment banks. So anything that is within the realm of private equity, the movement of personnel or the development of, the development of new firms, that's going to be her. So what you have to do is that when you have a client calling you up and saying, well, I'm doing X, you have to really be diligent in saying, do I give it to this reporter or do I give it to that one based on the information?
Got it. Excellent. Thank you. Okay, so now let's say we being the company that wants to get the press, we put together, we figure out what's newsworthy, we have something exciting going on, possibly we just released a new product into the marketplace, and we put together our press release, and I know there are formulas for that, which are, what is it, the who, what, how, when, and where? Is that the general gist of it? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so we have that. We put together our press release. How do we go about distributing that press release? Are press release distribution sites, are they good to use? If so, which ones are the most effective? And what about, I know there's a lot of free press release distribution sites online. What are your thoughts on all that?
Well, I'm actually a bit, scratch that. I'm somewhat skeptical of the efficacy of these free press release sites. And I am a traditionalist. I don't make any bones about being the most, being the most embracing. This will probably cause some of your colleagues to have a coronary of new technologies, such as releasing news by Twitter and all that. I'm a very traditional external relation communications professional. I have spent 20 years building up relationships with editors and journalists of large circulation publications like Bloomberg, Markets, New York Magazine, Wall Street Journal, Financial Times. They are traditional media, but they're the traditional media who count. My first focus for any client is to get them stories in those publications. I have a Rolodex of about 250 to 300 journalists who represent primarily finance, private equity, venture capital, and sort of general business media. Those are the people to whom I present a story first. I do use two services. I will use PR Newswire and I will use MarketWire. Of the media distribution services, I actually have a preference for PR Newswire. I do think that they have a better distribution network. I have found, especially with my one client, which is an early stage photovoltaic company, that when we did their big media launch, when they raised 10 or 15 million in Series A, that in addition to the sort of one-on-one I did with the newspapers and sort of the trade press like Corporate Finance Week and what have you, when we sent the release out on Newswire, PR Newswire, it actually resulted in getting significant interest from journalists, from blogs, from people who write for blogs like Earth to Tech and all of that. So I was very pleased with the results there. But I really think that the goal is this. You want to make certain, don't release a release just to release it and to log on to Google and do a search and suddenly see the release printed in its entirety on a news site. We all get hundreds of, we all get the emails with all hundreds of press releases a day and we don't have time to read them. What you need is for that press release to engender interest from a journalist who's going to report on specifically on what you did, expand on that information, and write an article. That's the end result.
Right.
Okay, and so we got to stay focused on that. If that comes from, distribution from the wire services, that's great. If it comes from the one-on-one and the really sort of high-touch relationships with editors and reporters, obviously that's the objective. And I am really quite emphasized you know, results are how many articles did I get? You know, and it doesn't mean like, it doesn't mean that if you only get one as a 15, that that's necessarily a failure, because if that one article is an FT merger market and speaks to your audience, that's a success.
Got it. And sort of pushing back to my previous question about getting your press release turned into an article, mm-hmm. you had mentioned that the way to do that is, you know, through relevancy and having something that's truly unique or new. Is there anything about the way you write it, that the press release or anything that lends itself to be more turn worthy into an article?
Yes, and again, it's the hierarchy of information. Make certain, in my mind's eye, when I write the first paragraph of a press release, in my mind's eye, this may sound sort of odd, I see a sponge. And what I'm doing is I'm wringing out all excess out of that sponge until it's highest and leanest, you know, state. So, and what that means is that that first paragraph in the release, I try to squeeze as much information as I can in an economy of words. So when the journalist picks up the release, if he can get, ideally, he can get all the information he needs to pique his interest in a headline, I've really done my job. But if he has to go down into that first paragraph, the first three sentences, he should know everything. You know, GrowThink raised $4 million in Series A today for XCOM Wireless. Done. That was a sentence. And then all the other supplementary information comes after that.
Got it. Okay, so you give it to them very clean, concise. They can get it and grab it right away, and mm-hmm. then you give more information.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Good, good. So, and then you mentioned, you know, PR Newswire and MarketWire, and I believe for those listening that it's their websites are simply prnewswire.com and marketwire.com.
Exactly.
So you can go check those out.
And BusinessWire, too, for the sort of business-to-business. I forgot
to
mention
that. Got it, got it. Yeah. Agreed. So with these sites, you know, I want to compare and contrast those a little bit versus your Rolodex. I understand, you know, it takes years and years, and you know, 20 years in your case, to build up that great Rolodex. Can the entrepreneur who is not yet able to afford a, you know, PR consultant, executive like yourself, can they be successful without those pre-existing relationships?
Absolutely, you can. Technology has made this so inexpensive to the point where the cost only comes in how much you are, you know, you pay yourself per hour, let's put it like that. So, you know, the time that you're devoting to putting together a simple media list is, you know, maybe the expense is calculated in, I'm doing this as opposed to being out with clients, you know, okay, so there's my cost for doing that. You know, in the, I hate to put it like this, but in the old days, when I first started out, it was a lot of legwork. You opened up these huge copies of Bacon's or Burrell's, and you looked, especially because, like politics is local, and sometimes a lot of good media is local, too. You know, and you went through and you know, if I had to do something in Ohio, I looked at all the major newspapers in Ohio, and I put together the list and all of that. And now technology makes that so much easier. You can go to Google and you can go, you know, media in Texas, and you get these lists, and you can then, you know, the hyperlink leads you to the website of the newspaper or the business magazine or the radio station or the television station or what have you. And from that, it's just a lot of legwork of putting together a halfway decent, actually that's, you know, I don't mean to be disparaging, you can put together a very good media list, especially on the local level. Let's say that you are a company in Austin and you want to, you know, generate some, you know, some press. It's about half an hour to get online, go to the About Us section of the Austin American Statesman, and find out who are the business reporters covering your sector. And, you know, in that half hour, you can also go to the Austin Business Journal and find out who are the business reporters covering your sector. So there you've got two great media outlets for yourself. And if you want, and if you're a little more ambitious, you know, you can pick up the Wall Street Journal, FT, The Deal, Bloomberg, you know, go on the website of Bloomberg CNBC, you know, what have you, and, you know, the names of reporters are pretty, and their email addresses are pretty easy to get, some more easily obtained than others, but, you know, it really isn't that difficult as an entrepreneur to build a good media list, especially if you're interested in it being highly, highly targeted. So, you know, I'd say if that's what you want to do, go out there and do it.
Got it. So you're talking about a media list here. And let's say the media list is you're doing the research on where you would want your article to be written, right? So you're saying, okay, here it would be ideal if my article is written in Forbes, so I'm going to add Forbes to my media list and figure out who the appropriate person is at Forbes to contact, correct?
Yes and no. Like, let's step back from that for a second. What kind of company am I? First question, okay. What, and if you want to get even more sort of forensic, it's like, you know, what are my revenues?
Okay.
Who are my customers? Okay, what are my customers reading? Are they reading Forbes? Or are they reading Crane's New York Business in the small business section every week? Okay, or are they reading the Puget Sound Business Journal? Or are they reading the National Law Journal? Or are they reading, you know, the weekend, you know, real estate section of the FT every Saturday? Find out what, you know, it's important to know what your customers are reading, because, you know, you don't want to, like, expend a lot of effort trying to get into Forbes or, you know, whatever, and find out that nobody that you need to be contacting and generating money from is reading it.
Got it. That's a great point. That's marketing 101 for, but usually people think about that in terms of creating products and, you know, distribution channels, but I've never really thought about that as much in terms of public relations, in terms of, okay, figuring out what they're reading. So let's say they're reading the Austin newspapers, and then do you submit a press release to that newspaper, or do you send an email to the reporter at that newspaper?
I do two things. If I know the reporter, I will call him up or her up first. I will say, you know, let me pull an example out of a hat here. Craig Rubens at Earth to Tech. Hey, Craig, it's Richard. You know, FTL Solar has now, their power mods are now going to be used to provide, you know, clean energy at the Emmys. I think you'd be really interested. Your audience would be really interested in knowing that. Can I send the release over to you? And typically it's a yes, sometimes it's a no, and you've got to be able to endure that. Some journalists are just very, very, you know, cut and dried. No, please, I'm not interested in click. And there may be some rejection there. And some are like, you know, oh, all right, you know, maybe it's not really my area. Maybe talk to my colleague here, but send the release anyway. I will send the release.
You're sending it to them directly because you know that
directly.
Person.
I know that person, okay. and it's an email. You know, again, I will emphasize being polite is really important. You know, dear Craig, thanks for speaking with me this morning. I've attached a copy of et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
If you have any questions, please call me back. Thanks so much, Richard Harris, and you know, make sure that your telephone numbers and email addresses are at the bottom of your, you know, your sincerely or thanks or however you sign, because that's important, because they may not want to scroll all the way back up to get that information. So, you know, make sure that your telephone number, your email address, all the contact stuff that you want them to know is at the bottom as well. And then if for reporters I don't know, it's honestly 50-50 days. Sometimes I will just pick up the phone and call them, and other times I will just send an email with what I hope is a catchy subject headline and then a little note and the release. But I will always follow up with them within an hour to see if they received the release. Hi, this is Richard Harris, you know, from Momentum Private Equity Communications. I'm calling on behalf of Polaris Venture Partners you know, concerning, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to make sure that you got the release, that you have any questions, all of that. Because you have to make that human contact. You've got to make the effort. You just can't assume that if I send the email, somehow I've done my thing. And if you're doing this on your own as a business person, you know, if you're not going to make that follow-up effort, you know, that follow-up call, don't waste your time trying to have a media program. You know, and if you're a professional, you know, working on behalf of your client is paying you to do a good job, period, end of story. And you need to be motivated. And part of that motivation is getting on that phone after you've got sent off that email and saying, hey, kind of being in their face, but in a nice way. Hey, this is Richard. Want to make sure you got the release. Do you have any questions? And, you know, on and on.
Okay, so you're doing both here. You know, the question of when you're promoting by email and then you're following up by phone.
Yes, I'm very, very traditional about my quote unquote methodology, and I find that it does work. And at the end of the day, you want to build relationships with these reporters, and so they're not going to be able to do that unless you like actually talk to them.
Got it. Okay. So, and is there any such thing as submitting a press release to a newspaper, like to the paper, like the New York Times? You would never submit a release just to New York Times. You would do it to the appropriate reporters. Is that correct?
Exactly. Like Andrew Ross Sorkin at the Deal Book.
Got it.
And you know, he's actually an interesting fellow. He really will get back to you, and he's
right.
Very, very big. And actually, if you go to the website of the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times as well. And in your area, in LA, Los Angeles Business Journal, you can get the email addresses of pretty much everyone you need in the business and the business section of the paper who cover business news. Yeah, absolutely, especially for the journal. It's a guy by the name of Richard Clue, who has written two stories on Growth Inc. actually, and he's since 2008, I think. And it's, you know, it's our clue at Los Angeles Business Journal, LABusinessJournal.com, you know, but it's not that difficult to get that information.
Good. Now, what about if I can't decide on which journalist to go after? So let's say I'm looking at the floor, I see carpet. So let's say I'm in the carpet business and I just introduced a new cool type of carpet. And I look at this, interior magazine, and I see that there are three journalists that have written about carpets in the last 6 months. Can I email all three of them? Do I have to choose one?
I don't like the idea of emailing all three of them, because I'll tell you why they talk, and they'll feel like they're being spammed. So I would say it's going to be a process of elimination. Of the three people who have written about carpet in the last 6 months, who's written the story which is closest to what I have to offer? And you're going to have to just, you know, I hate to be this inexact, at some point you just have to cross your fingers and hope you've selected the right person. However, what's great is that if you get in contact with a journalist, my experience has been they will say, you know, Richard, I'm actually not the person you really want to speak to is X.
Right.
And, you know, they will generally tell you who it is. And then you call that person and you say, John Smith recommended that I speak with you. And that's sort of an in.
Got it. Now, what about if going back to the example of there are three potential reporters. Now, let's say we contact the first one and they just blow us off. So we send the email, we leave the voice message. Well, first of all, what is too much? You know, I send them an email, I leave them a voice message. So my question one is, how much follow-up can I do with that reporter? Am I allowed to, you know, at what point am I harassing or spamming them? And also, question two is, at what point, if any, can I then say, okay, that person's on vacation or they're just ignoring me, I can go after reporter number two?
I think, generally, an email and a follow-up is sufficient. Because in the follow-up, they're either going to say, we're interested, and they're going to ask you for information, or they're going to say, I'm not interested, and you're going to say thank you very much and just sort of, you know, end the conversation. And there are some journalists who, you know, are just not, for some reason, I don't know why, that are just not very receptive to PR calls,
right.
Which is ironic because so many of them are completely dependent on being sort of fed news and subject matter in order to write stories, but there's the great push and pull between journalists and PR professionals. So I would say the initial email and a follow-up is sufficient. If that in that follow-up they, you know, they actually decide to write about what your topic, you know, after the article is all said and done, you know, send them a thank you note. But I think 2 to 3 times is sufficient.
Okay, but what's in it? If they blow you off, let's say I'm just, you know, I am dead set. I need my company in the Los Angeles Times or whatever publication. And I'm an entrepreneur, so I'm aggressive. I am not going to give up. But when I contact the first reporter, I send them an email. They never reply to it. I send them, I leave them a voice message. They don't return my call. You know, can I go after a second reporter? And if so, you know, when would you?
If you feel, okay, look, if you have done your homework and you say, well, this fellow or this woman covers my sector too, feel free to send them an email, you know, and to do that sort of contact process. But
right.
If, you know, if this person is the only person that really covers your area, and he's just not, you know, he's not responding to you, you know, we're just out of luck there. You know, you come back, you know, come back around the next time. If you have a new piece of news, you know, let's try to connect with them next time, or maybe if you, you know, you feel like there's something, some sort of animosity, maybe want to connect with their managing editor, although I don't think that that is really, unless it's, you know, completely impossible to get through to this person, maybe you want to do that. But typically, you want there, in a larger newsroom, there are going to be 2 to 3 people that at least have that touch upon the area, that, you know, that touch upon your industry. So you may have better luck.
Got it. What about stroking egos? What I mean by that is, let's say the editor or the journalist had written an article previously, about going back to my carpets example. So should in my email to them, should I reference that and say, hey, I read the great article you wrote on, you know, purple carpets in, you know, the February edition, and I think I have something relevant to that?
I that is a great way to open the conversation, except I would substitute the word I would substitute the word interesting rather than great, because I just don't like to be fawning to journalists,
because
they know when they know when smoke is being blown, and I just, like, you know, I'm like, I greatly enjoyed your interesting article on, you know, bamboo carpets last week, and I thought this would be of interest of you to you as well. Then go right into what, you know, go right into your pitch.
Got it. I like that. So you're basically letting them know that you care about them, you're following them, that you respect them, and without being ridiculous about it and saying, hey, you're so great.
Exactly.
Got it. Okay, and does any of this differ when you're dealing with freelance writers? And maybe you can talk a little about that, because I see a lot of times in a magazine, I'll see, you know, the author, and then they'll say, you know, Jen Smith is a freelance person. They'll have, let's say, a Yahoo address versus an email address from the official publication. Can you contact the freelancers in the same way?
Absolutely, and because it's interesting, I don't really deal with a lot of freelance writers. I do still, even in this age that, you know, papers are dropping like flies, and we may end up losing the Boston Globe over the weekend, you know, I still am lucky enough to deal with a lot of traditional journalists. Freelance writers are like, well, maybe this wouldn't be great for the publication you saw me in, but I write also for this publication, I'd be good for them. And so that is, you know, and so that's always a great, you know, that's always a great resource. They may not be able, you may not see your news in the week after or 2 weeks after, but, you know, it could develop into a more substantive article, substantive piece down the road.
Got it. Excellent. Thank you. is there any difference in pitching your press release or your story to different forms of media, like a blogger or a website versus a print publication versus television or versus radio media?
Yeah, there's a huge difference. When you pitch to radio or TV, generally you get in contact with the assignment editor, and he or she will distribute your release to the appropriate reporter. So if you're lucky enough to have that, that reporter's direct email, I do have, direct emails for television reporters in a couple of states. I just pitch it directly to them, but definitely for radio, you're going to radio and TV, you're probably going to have an assignment editor who will, forward the release to the correct person, as opposed to newsrooms where I found that you can actually contact the journalist directly. Bloggers are so blogging is opinion. Masquerading as this is my sort of jaundiced opinion about a lot of these guys, blogging is opinion masquerading as informational news. You're dealing with an individual. The perspective you're going to get is just going to be his or her perspective on your product, and they get to say things like it's great or it's lousy, and you don't get to sue them. That's a different, that's a whole different sort of information source, and it generally is very similar, that the approach I use is similar to the approach that I would use for a journalist. The press release, the catchy headline in the subject heading of the email, sending it off to them and following up.
Got it. Okay, good. That's very, very helpful. What about timing? When you use when you're doing an email, we can all use our best judgment. Actually, even email. I mean, the two questions. In terms of timing, is there any best time of the day or week to distribute a press release using a service like PR Newswire, MarketWire, BusinessWire? And likewise, is there a better time of the day or week to email or contact a specific journalist?
I've done it because I've done it this way for so long. I always believe earlier is better. So if I'm going to use a wire service, I generally will send the release. That I will code the release to go out at 9 or 9:30 in the morning. And the reason is that I figure that journalists get in the office about 9:45 or 10, and they will have at least a bit of time to look at things, to look at releases. And I also, when I do the one-on-one contact, I always try to get things released Monday or Tuesday, because it's the beginning of the week and it gives you a lot of lead time to build a good story for your client, as opposed to, and you can, it's the beginning of the week, you can try to build some interest and a good story which will appear that same week. Friday, not such a good day, because typically they're not going to, the follow-up is going to be the Monday of the next week. So I try to do Monday or Tuesday at the latest Wednesday. I tell clients I will not release news on Thursday or Friday. I just don't think it's worth it unless it's wait till the next week, unless it absolutely has to be released.
Got it. You use the term build a good story. What is it? What do you mean by that?
I mean, really, literally, sending out the release, getting the call back from the reporter, pitching him more information. He's saying, or she's saying, okay, who can I talk to about that? You can talk to Jay, you can talk to Emily, you can talk to Tony Saxton, you can talk, and then, emailing your client and saying, hey, we have a good potential story in, the Los Angeles Times or, Austin American Statesman or the Miami Herald or Chicago Tribune. Let's set up an interview at 2:00 on Tuesday with this reporter. And so that is that whole building process that started with the initial release, and if everything goes well, it ends then with a great interview. And if you do that in the beginning of the week, it just gives you so much more time to get all those things done.
Excellent. What about, I know in a lot of markets, I guess even in venture capital or raising capital for somebody, you want to show some momentum and you want to create this competitive marketplace and say, well, you're talking to one investor and you tell them that another investor is interested, and that sort of makes them interested because they know something. It's sort of that social proof factor of persuasion. Can you use that, or is that good or bad to use in PR, such as you're talking to one journalist at one magazine or newspaper and letting them know that you're talking to somebody at maybe a competing newspaper or magazine? Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, you know, honestly, Dave, I've never done that.
Okay.
I mean, so often, especially with Dow Jones, which is interesting, I'm always asked, well, can you embargo the news until X? And I really will not do that, because for my mind is, why should I give you an exclusive unless you're going to give me the front page of the business section and I'm going to get a 4-color photo of Dave Levinsky with a new client, you know, and like I'm going to get the headline and everything, you know, why should I prevent my client from generating as much coverage in as many outlets as possible? So I am not one to really do embargo or exclusivity. And on the flip side of that, I've never said, well, Dave Tanaka is writing about this in the San Francisco, or the deal, or New York Magazine, because they may just turn that around on you and say, fine, let him write about it.
So that technique does not work.
In my mind, there's got to be a balance. I mean, I cannot have the conceit that I'm the only public relations person in the whole world that has some piece of information that they're going to be interested in. And so, my focus is to work with them and to let them see why it's important to their readership that they should put a spotlight on my client. And, that's my job.
Got it. When we spoke the other day, you mentioned the point about sort of that one-on-one communication, making the journalists feel that you're speaking to them and only them. Can you talk through that a little bit?
What I meant by that, and sort of how kind of the mechanics of that, is respect their time. Be concise and brief. Be polite. Forward but polite. Follow up with them promptly in everything. Like when you say it'll be there in 15 minutes, make sure it's there in 15 minutes. On the other end, when you're trying to arrange interviews with your colleagues, make sure that you can collapse the lapse of time between making that promise and actually following through into a limit, do it as quickly as possible, because that really does build credibility. And also, as I said, I come back to this all the time, don't waste their time. Make sure that the news that you're giving them is really news. And not because you're desperate to have some coverage and so you're just going to throw any old thing out there and hope that they might be foolish enough to pick up on it. Because that's really no way to build a long-term relationship with a reporter. People know when they're being played. So just don't do that.
Got it. Going back to contacting reporters, and especially by email, I had a question about any special formatting that you need and putting something in the subject line. And what I've heard you say already was in terms of formatting to make sure you have your phone number and the email on the bottom so it's easy for them to contact you. And you had mentioned having an exciting subject line. So maybe you could talk, if there's anything else in terms of special formatting and maybe some subject lines that are better than others. I heard things like putting the reporter's name in the subject line so they distinguish it from all the probably hundreds of emails they receive every day. So maybe you can give us your thoughts on that.
Well, when you guys had that engagement with Safari Air last spring already, time is really flying. You know, we wrote a press release about it, and we got some coverage on it, and the subject line, this is a little pithy, but the tagline I put in the subject heading for the email was Safari Air Takes Flight.
Got it.
And that was applicable to a range of journalists, not only the private equity and press and finance press, but also aviation industry press. Oh, a new airline in a time where airlines, you know, in 2006, we had all those business class airlines like Silverjet and blah, 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 and they are no more. And, you know, and so for someone, anyone who covers aviation to get news of a new airline is like, whoa, you know, what are they doing? What, you know, maybe it's a woe of skepticism or what have you, but at least it's a woe that has some interest in what you're trying to convey. And so to make sure that the headline is, you know, the headline is catchy. As catchy as you can. Some things cannot make, you know, you cannot make compelling headlines of, no matter how hard you try. So at the very least, just, you know, make it concise.
Got it. Okay, excellent. And in terms of formatting, there's nothing special in the body of the email?
Just a very short, concise email. Let me do something here. I'm gonna find a pitch for you.
Oh, great. I appreciate that.
And I'm trying to find one I think is... Let's try this. Of course, don't promise anything you can't deliver. Of course, now I can't find a pitch here on my desktop. But one of the things that I love to do is that I love to. I'm seeing if this is one that would be relevant to you guys. Okay, that's media distribution list. All right. You can see all the magic of PR here. Anyway, so the pitch should have enough information about you, about not only what your product, but something also about you and why information about your company would be of interest to the readers. And, you know, for example, saying that, you know, Growth Inc. has completed over 2,000 engagements and has helped raise over $1 billion in funding. You know, something which was going to be, in addition to the information itself, okay, here it is. And this is something I wrote for Growth Inc. regarding V-Star. I'm not going to read you the whole pitch, just it's a paragraph that I always include after the new information. I say, the following information will also be of interest to your readers. Growth Inc.'s role as a strategic advisor to V-Star Interiors exemplifies the firm's position as the leading advisory transactional partner to emerging and middle market companies. Growth Inc. has completed over 2,000 advisory transactional engagements, which have helped raise over $1 billion in investment capital. Inc. magazine ranked Growth Inc. as one of the top 100 business services firms in the United States. You know, and then I go on as a third point saying, you know, your clients have included Deutsche Bank, McKesson, and Paramount. So it kind of goes, wow, okay, these guys are really adept at what they do. And then, because you never know what other subjects that journalist is covering, and he can say, okay, well, if you guys do that, let me ask you some questions, and it can even build into being another supplemental story. So your pitch should include information about the topic and also information of like why your company is interesting to the reader.
Got it. Oh, excellent. And for those listening that aren't familiar with V-Star, V-Star is a recent project that Growth Inc. did with tennis star Venus Williams. That's her new business, and that made that pitch much more media friendly as well, obviously, right, because of Venus Williams, the celebrity.
Exactly. Exactly.
Excellent. Just a couple more questions here. Any additional tips and tricks to getting your press release picked up by journalists?
I really think it just comes down to two things. doing your homework, and that homework is putting together a good media list, making sure that the people on your media list are relevant to the subject matter you're presenting, and writing a good, solid press release. Try to get all the information in the headline, believe it or not, and you're like thinking, how do I do that? Well, if it's a, let's say it's a fundraising press release, it's GrowThink raising $15 million for iFair. Done. Okay. And then, you know, and then in that first paragraph, tell them everything that they need to know. You know, it's really not, I mean, it really isn't that difficult. I'll just give you an example here. From another client, which is now, it's developed these flexible structures that are not only provide shelter, they also generate their own electricity. And here's the first paragraph. New York, March 31st, 2009, FTL Solar, the world's leading creator of lightweight portable solar power generating structures, today unveiled the Cabana Mod line of 20-foot by 20-foot and 10-foot by 10-foot shade rendering power generating tents. Done.
Right.
Okay. Until you got all the information, the basic information that you need, the reporter needs in three sentences. And so just being concise is really key. So just do your homework and be concise, and you should be fine.
Okay. So we do that. We get our, all goes well. We got a great list. We're concise. We give them a hard-hitting press release. And the journalist picks up our story and they run with it and they write a nice article. What do we do next? You mentioned earlier sending them a thank you note. Is that an email? Is that a physical note? And is it appropriate to send a gift to the journalist, or is that inappropriate?
I think gifts are highly inappropriate.
Inappropriate. Okay.
Highly inappropriate. I think that it looks really. There's the potential for a plethora of tackiness is just too much to be imagined, because it would be really tacky for the journalist to accept it, because it says, hey, I can be bribed.
Right.
You know, and it looks on the point of the client that you are so desperate to get coverage that you'll do just about anything to do it, and we can't have that.
Right.
And what is appropriate is a little thank you email saying we really appreciate your interest in the company and we look forward to working with you in the days ahead. Sort of keep it simple and keep it direct and keep it nice. And I think a follow-up, and maybe even if you want to like print that out and as a letter and send it to them, I think that's a really nice touch and a real rare one these days.
Got it. Yeah, I guess a letter probably does stand out a lot, as you said.
Yeah. And believe it or not, actually, an email stands out enough too, because what you want to do is not, in their mind's eye, not like be like every other mercenary PR professional. And almost it's so transactive. Hey, I got what I wanted. My client got what they wanted. Thanks, and you sort of hit the road.
Right.
You want to. Be standing out. You want to stand out and take the time to write a note and say thanks. That's not a lot. It's like 2 minutes and you hit send. You know, and if you want to spend 4 minutes, print it out on your laser jet, put it in an envelope and put a stamp on it and send it out and send it to him or send it to her. And those things really do mean a lot.
It's a great point. I think it's because your goal, you know, obviously, is to, if they write about you once, is to have them continue to cover you for the, you know,
exactly.
Weeks, months, years ahead, and that could be worth a lot to your venture.
Exactly.
Excellent. So one last final question for you. You know, what else should our listeners know about creating and distributing a great press release that I forgot to ask you about?
Okay. Just make it short. It really shouldn't be any more than one page.
Okay.
And that includes your tagline. And I will give you an example of that? All right, so the tagline for FTL Solar is this. FTL Solar is the world's leading manufacturer of lightweight, flexible power generating fabrics and structures integrated with thin film solar cells. FTL Solar is an independent spinoff of FTL Design Studio, founded in 1977. FTL licensed products have generated over $2 billion in sales, and this company has received over 50 design awards. Their technologies have been featured on CNN, NBC Week and Today, the Science Channel, the Discovery Channel. Discover how FTL Solar shelters and fabrics generate power that is sustainable, secure, and independent by logging on to, and then they give the website address. That's the tagline that you put at the end of the release. So it gives them sort of a snapshot of who you are. And you know, GrowThink, you know, we put an informational paragraph, but not really a tagline. Forgive me for that. An informational paragraph about GrowThink every time on every release. You know, that we send out. And it just gives the reporter some information about the company that they can use as sort of, you know, filler, or it can help supplement some background information about, you know, about their subject matter. Like for this, I'm not going to read all of yours, but it's like about GrowThink is the last sort of paragraph on every release. GrowThink, named by Inc. magazine as one of the nation's top 100 business services companies, is the leading strategic and transactional advisory firm to engineering and middle market companies. Excuse me, emerging and middle market companies. Sorry about that. You know, GrowThink provides research, strategic, transactional, and investment capital services to its clients, enabling companies to identify and leverage opportunities for growth and market leadership. That's what you do. And you know, and so the journalist has that information on their fingertips, and plus the information you're giving them, it's all on one page. And so just make sure that all that information is on one page, because it really isn't. You need to start editing.
Got it. You need to get it down to that one page.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent, Richard. All the information might have been, you know, second nature to you. It was extremely enlightening to me, and I'm sure that all the people that are going to be listening to this are going to get a ton of value out of it. So I really, really appreciate your time, Richard.
No problem. Anytime I can help you guys, you just give me a ring, okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.